Today, crunch time cometh. The DFA Daily to the 17th of July 2020. Hello again, I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Welcome to the latest post covering finance and problem news with a distinctively Australian flavour and with a touch of philosophy on the side. Today we start with some international economic news before looking at local property price trends. And a quick reminder that next Tuesday on DFA Live, I'll be walking through the latest property and household confidence scenarios, taking account of all the available data. But that's before the Treasurer's statement next Thursday on the next phase of government support, which will need to be both targeted and substantial. So mark your diary for both my show at 8 p.m. Sydney on Tuesday and the Treasurer statement on Thursday. Both will be big. But first today to the US. The number of Americans filing for unemployment barely declined last week, signalling challenges to the economic recovery are multiplying. Initial jobless claims in regular state programs totaled 1.3 million in the week ended the 11th of July, down 10,000 from the prior period, the smallest decline since March. Labor Department figures showed on Thursday. 17.3 million Americans claimed ongoing unemployment benefits in state programs in the week ended July 4, indicating economic pain remains widespread. Jobless files exceeded 1 million for the 17th straight week, compared with an average of just over 210,000 before the pandemic. Without seasonal adjustments, initial claims rose by 108,800 to 1.5 million. And that's the first increase since early April, though the rise followed a shortened holiday week. Of states that have seen recent increases in virus cases, California, Florida, and Arizona all saw increases in initial claims on an unadjusted basis. So far, 22 states have either reversed or paused reopenings, according to Bank of America economists, with California recently shutting indoor dining statewide, along with other actions. The figures add to signs that the labour market recovery is stalling as coronavirus cases surge and reopenings pause or reverse across the country. Conditions are also at risk of worsening with the potential expiration of supplemental federal jobless benefits, along with demand that continues to be depressed in a variety of sectors. American Airlines and United Airlines, for instance, have indicated they could lay off tens of thousands later this year. That said, retail sales rose in June by more than forecast and reached pre-pandemic levels, underlining the importance of the federal stimulus set to run out this month. The robust increase in retail sales in June, fueled by broad-based removal of lockdowns and following a sharp bounce in May, is positive, yet it's likely to be a temporary development. Still, there was other positive news on the economy on Thursday too. A measure of consumer sentiment rose to the highest level since mid-April, while optimism among home builders jumped to pre-pandemic levels as mortgage rates fell to a record low. US stocks fell on Thursday, while 10-year Treasury yields remained lower after the report. And the Chinese economy returned to growth in the second quarter, marking an important milestone in the global struggle to climb out of the slump brought about by the coronavirus. However, weak consumer spending remains a serious, persistent drag. And now the challenge will be to sustain the recovery. Gross domestic product expanded 3.2% in the 3 months to June from a year ago, reversing a 6.8% decline in the first quarter and beating the median forecast of 2.4%. However, the world's second biggest economy remains 1.6% smaller than a year ago, but continued drop in retail sales is undercutting industrial output. Industrial output rose 4.8% from a year earlier, matching the median estimate, but retail sales shrank 1.8%, which was weaker than projected. The recovery was driven by credit stimulus, as evident in the strong infrastructure and property investment, while the recovery in retail sales and private investment has continued to lag. The poor retail picture may be less negative than the headline data because sales of cosmetics, beverages, telecommunication equipment, and daily use articles, and alcohol and tobacco all posted double-digit increases, but autos and petroleum products posted large declines, though perhaps they were influenced by one-off factors. Debt levels in the real economy continued to rise in the second quarter, albeit at a slower pace than in the first 3 months. The ratio stood at 265.4% at the end of June versus 258% in March, according to Bloomberg's calculations. China home prices rose at the fastest pace in 10 months in June, prompting some local authorities to roll out fresh housing curbs, and the value of home sales reached a monthly record of 1.84 trillion yuan in June as developers offered more projects to boost first half results. New home prices in 70 major cities, excluding state subsidized housing, increased 0.58% last month. National Bureau of Statistics data released on Thursday showed, and values in the secondary market, which is largely free from government intervention, gained 0.31%, the biggest rises in 11 months. Frenetic buying is increasingly taking place across large and medium cities where properties are seen as safe places to store wealth. In the report, Top 60 Asia-Pacific Banks, COVID-19 Drives Downside Risks as Credit Losses Jump and Earnings Fall, S&P says it took 50 negative rating actions on lenders in the second quarter of 2020, and we may yet downgrade more institutions. Our ratings on lenders are clearly linked to the region's economic health, and we only see Asia-Pacific GDP trends normalising by 2023 at the earliest, they said. The agency says the Asia-Pacific region will lose $2.7 trillion of economic output over 2020 and 21, hitting the performance of banks in the region. The main risks are that the pandemic lasts longer and is more severe than we now estimate, and that no vaccine or treatment will be available before the second half of 2021. A credit analyst at S&P Global Ratings said the extent of defaults from borrowers and banks' credit losses would become clearer when governments unwind fiscal support and banks end their loan repayment moratoriums. We expect most institutions in the region will show a sharp rise in credit losses and a sharp drop in earnings in the next 2 to 3 years due to the COVID-19-induced economic downturn. In its base case, S&P expects most banks in Asia-Pacific will absorb the hits from COVID-19 and start to recover by the end of 2021. Nevertheless, a more severe or prolonged hit to the economies than our current baseline would almost certainly push banks' credit losses higher, drive their earnings lower, and amplify other risks. High private sector indebtedness and still high asset prices in many countries may also set up some countries for a disorderly correction, it said. The agency is forecasting significant property price drops in Australia, China, Hong Kong, and New Zealand. Consumer business sentiment is weak in these markets, which are grappling with untypical high employment and economic contraction. In our base case, we expect these price declines will not trigger banking system crises, as any correction should broadly match the strong price growth seen over the past 1 to 2 years. Furthermore, they say we expect the country's property markets to trend upward again by late 2021 as their economies recover. Now, Westpac was in the news again for all the wrong reasons. An internal review released today has found serious shortcomings in how the bank handled non-financial risks in the wake of its 23 million breaches of anti-money laundering law. Westpac's culture, governance, and accountability remediation plan has found that important aspects of the bank's non-financial risk culture were immature and reactive. The reassessment, which follows AUSTRAC's statement of claim over Westpac's 23 million breaches of anti-money laundering law, also found that the bank was overly complex, resulting in confusion around accountability. Our reassessment confirms that our management of non-financial risk is currently not at the standard we set for ourselves, said CEO Peter King. It is clear we have more to do to address these shortcomings, including improving our risk management capability and risk culture, which is not where we want it to be. As a result, we are embarking on a comprehensive multi-year program called Customer Outcomes and Risk Excellence, or CORE. The program is a company priority, he said. I'm accountable for its delivery. And Maurice Blackburn filed action in the Supreme Court of Victoria against Westpac and St George on Wednesday for commissions granted from 1st of March 2013 to 31st October 2018. The class action has alleged that the bank gave out flex commissions, a common form of commission in the car finance industry paid to car dealers, incentivizing to set the loan interest rate at a higher rate of interest than they otherwise would have been. The practice was banned by ASIC in November 2018. Westpac confirmed it was served with the class action on Friday morning, saying it would be defending the claim. Maurice Blackburn has sought to recover damages of an unspecified amount. Under a flex commission arrangement, banks fix a base rate of interest that could be charged under a car loan agreement, and the motor dealer or finance intermediary who sold the loan was able to determine or recommend the interest rate for the loan. The commission payable to the motor dealer or finance broker intermediary was set by the flex amount, which is the difference between the base rate and the contract rate. The bank also benefited from the commission because the flex amount would in practice be shared between it and the intermediary. The discretion to increase the interest rate from a base rate was not determined by an objective criteria such as the credit risk of the consumer, the law firm said. It made an example of a car dealer being able to set the rate at 6.5% for one customer and 15.5% per annum for another, even if they bought the same model of vehicle of similar value. As found by the Royal Commission, flex commission arrangements were not disclosed to the consumer. The final report of the Hayne Commission stated many borrowers knew nothing of these arrangements. Lenders did not publicise them, dealers did not reveal them. The dealer's interest in securing the highest rate possible is obvious. It was the consumer who bore the cost. Further, the car dealers are the representatives of the bank and finance companies in relation to the loans, Maurice Blackburn stated, with the financial institutions being held responsible for their actions. The law firm has invited individuals to register interest if they had a car loan between the 1st of March 2013 and the 31st of October 2018, issued under Westpac or St George credit licence, including the Bank of Melbourne, that was organised by a car dealer. Maurice Blackburn stated it was still investigating flex commissions paid to car dealers by other banks and lenders. ANZ for loans given from the 1st of March 2013 to the 30th of October 2018. Macquarie Bank from the 1st of March 2013 to the 31st of October 2018. And Esanda from March 2013 to the 31st of October. Finally, to home prices. Shane Oliver of AMP says property prices are set to fall further. Going forward, it's messy, he said. This coronavirus shock is going to be worse than the recessions of the early 80s and 90s, and we are still waiting for it to end. In the short term, we have more downside ahead of us, and there's a lot of debate about how big that downside is going to be. Prices probably won't bottom before the middle of next year, so it will probably be 2025 at the earliest by the time prices reach a new high, he said. Dr. Oliver's base case scenario remains a 5 to 10% fall in prices across the combined capital cities, with 10% drops in both Sydney and Melbourne. There is a risk that prices will fall further if Melbourne remains locked down and Sydney follows, he said. And in fact, I think prices will drop further as more are forced to sell into the falling market, but we'll see. Nevertheless, the latest from CoreLogic, for what it's worth, suggests further drops. Perth's falls since COVID started are down 2.5%, and falling Victoria is also under pressure. And with the current phase 2 lockdown, we should expect more damage there. Crunch time cometh. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.